This is Jewish Board Talk with Cherise Zifford, only on 101.9 High FM.
Weaponizing sexual violence is among the most heinous of all crimes. Yet, since the brutal Hamas attack on Israeli citizens on the 7th of October, 2023, this is what happened. My guest today is Miriam Guevara, an Israeli social activist. She brings extensive expertise in working with marginalized communities, immigrants, asylum seekers, and survivors of human trafficking. She was also the guest speaker at a rally in support of women that was held this morning. Miriam, since the outbreak of the Israel-Gaza war on October the 7th, her organization, the Survivors of Sexual Violence Advocacy Group, has been engaged in addressing various issues to support victims of Hamas and those whose treatment has been disrupted or halted due to the war. I'm delighted to have her as my guest now. Miriam, welcome, and thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Miriam, firstly, tell me a little bit about yourself.
So I'm an Israeli and raised and born. Right now I live in Tel Aviv, but my parents are from a moshav in south of the country.
Okay.
And on October 7th, I spent the Simchat Torah at my parents' house.
Oh, wow.
But luckily for us, we are not in the Gaza envelope. We are, I don't know if they're listening, no Israel knows the map, but we are near a city called Ashdod. And we wake up from the sirens and the missiles. But beside that, not to dive in right away to October 7, as you said, I'm a social activist. I'm a human rights expert on marginalized population and communities. I specialize in gender-based violence, sexual violence, and migration and immigration. Emphasize on forced migration, meaning human trafficking survivors and refugee and asylum seekers. And I'm the deputy director of a civil society organization in Israel. As you said, we are called the Survivor of Sexual Violence Advocacy Group. And we are dealing for policy change in Israel, everything that is dealing in the field of human of sexual violence in Israel.
Sexual violence and human trafficking, how related are they?
Well, if you are being trafficked for sexual reasons only. Well, human trafficking has a lot of violence in it.
Yeah.
And sometimes the violence can be sexual violence as well. So even if you're not trafficking for the sex industry or something like that, you can be a victim of sexual violence.
I know that after South Africa, you're going to Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
Is that one of the core centers of human trafficking? Or why, what is your work in Ghana?
I was invited, our organization was invited by the Israeli embassy in Ghana to speak about the sexual violence at October 7th. So this is why I'm going to Ghana.
Okay, so the work you do in Israel is mainly with Israeli society then? So your focus is Israeli society?
Yes, yes. We are organizations of survivors of sexual violence from all gender and all ages. Obviously, our organization don't have minor volunteers, but we have people that got assaulted and victimized as minors, as children. So we are dealing with the whole range of sexual violence. And again, we are mostly working in the field of policy changing. So we are meeting with a Knesset member of our parliament and other government authorities to make change in this field.
I know that you're here, you've been meeting with NGOs in South Africa. Is the same principle of policy and is it universal? What happens in Israel is what's happening here in South Africa, although I imagine South Africa is at a greater scale.
Well, sexual violence is sexual violence is sexual violence. Like we will see the same phenomena in every different country around the world, not only in South Africa or in Africa in the continent or in Israel or any, we will see the same phenomena everywhere. Obviously, different cultures and different set of rules and governments affect the way that these phenomena are in our everyday life. But, you know, people are going to be molested everywhere and people are going to be raped everywhere. And it's our duty as survivors and to raise our voice. And this is why our organizations are led by the rule, nothing about us, nothing about us without us. So we are survivors, again, from all genders. And if you want to talk about us, if you want to talk about sexual violence, about prevention of sexual violence and how to treat sexual violence survivors and victims, you have to talk with us because we have the expertise.
You have the expertise. Are you not too emotionally caught up in this? And is it not triggering?
And if it's
for
so,
you?
So what? Like this is the thing that you have to deal with when you are talking with survivors. So sometimes I'm triggering, or other volunteer is triggering. Sometimes like our PTSD is coming out. It's okay because if you deal with this field of trauma, you have to be trauma informed.
Sure.
So, and this is our power. This is how the way that we're dealing, and this is the way that we're doing our work. Again, nothing about us
without,
nothing about us without us. If you want to know how sexual violence affects the survivors and the victims, you have to speak with the survivors and the victims. And sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes we will cry and sometimes we will yell and we like lose our focus. Again, PTSD, anxiety, everything, all the gifts that we received from the sexual violence and from the abuse. Okay, you have to deal with that because if you want to help us, then help us. Yeah. And if you don't want to help us, move out of the way.
So we talk about triggering. The first thing you mentioned is that where you were on the 7th of October.
Yes.
Right. So I think for Israeli society and to a great extent, global Jewry, the 7th of October was a trauma at many levels.
Yes. And I must say that I think that I fully understand that only when I landed here.
Really?
Because the person that took me from the airport, we have a little chat in the car, and this is the first thing that I told her. And I told the story many times before that where I was in October 7, in my parents' house, and everything that happened over there. Again, I don't want to like say that I was in the Gaza envelope and I witnessed and saw and experienced everything that they experienced. Again, if you look at the Israeli map, I was near Ashdod, relatively safe. And I started to cry. And I said, I told the story many times before, but I think that being in a different country and saying this story and telling this story in a different language, in a foreign language, I'm sure that the audience can figure out that English is not my native language. It affected me more, and I started to cry. And I think it's the first time that I understand that I really are in trauma from October 7. You know, I didn't sleep for like months, and sometimes I still have difficulty to sleep, thinking about my nieces and nephew, like where I will hide them. So I know that it's affected me, but being here again in a different country, saying that in a different language, in a foreign language, something dropped and I started to cry.
Miriam, you and I have one thing in common we've established. Neither of us can look at the footage.
Yes.
That came out from the 7th of October.
Well, I make the choice not to look at the footage, not to see the famous movie. I heard the stories, I read the testimonies in the Israeli newspapers. And you know, if we look at history, like sexual violence didn't occur a lot in the conflict in Israel, but it's not a new phenomenon around the world, sexual violence during armed conflict. So as we said before, it's the same phenomena occurred everywhere around the world. So I know the stories from Rwanda, I know the story from Sudan, I know the story from Yugoslavia, and most recently Ukraine. So I can understand in some level what's happened over there. But you know, I'm considering myself an informed woman. This is my field of expertise. But when the stories about the sexual violence began in Israel, I couldn't believe it. It took me 2 days to realize that it actually happened in Israel. Because again, it didn't, like the conflict in Israel of 70 years long. We have time for a lot of terrible thing happened to in Israel, but never such mass sexual violence occurred in Israel. So it was new for me. And like, I'm used to read about it and to study it and to have a lecture in the university about what happened in Rwanda and what happened in Yugoslav. But I never thought it would happen to my people. And all of a sudden, it's happened to my people. And I think, again, because I was in Israel and I was relatively in the south, that can happen to me also. And that's the thing that, you know, you're not immune. I thought that I'm living in a safe environment. I thought that I have, that will not happen to me. And it's going to happen to me, like, easily. I can be at the Nova Festival. Easily, I can go to like a weekend in one of the kibbutzim. Like I told my husband, like we can visit the, like doing a Sof Shavua, like in Saturday, doing the Shabbat in one of the kibbutzim. Easily, why not? It can easily be us.
So it took away the sense of security of Israeli citizens. And
it Israel took away my sense of security.
But I think Israel always prided itself as being a safe country.
Relatively, yes.
So
again, I felt very safe. I was like in the delusion that I'm in a safe place.
Okay, so am I correct? And you have experience, as you said, from Rwanda, Ukraine, that the brutality, though, of the Hamas attack on Israeli men and women was more savage than what we might have seen anywhere else.
Well, I think that it's similar of what we saw in Rwanda.
Okay.
And we have to remember Rwanda, the sexual violence in Rwanda occurred during genocide. So if we see similar cases in genocide and we see the same type of violence occur in Israel, we can understand what they aim for.
Genocide, and so ironic because South Africa has taken Israel to the ICJ for committing, or to stop Israel from committing genocide. Let's talk a little bit about hashtag Me Too, unless you're a Jew. We saw the New York Times print an article earlier about the sexual violence, and it was horrendous. It was horrendous to read. Then Al Jazeera and others questioned that report, and that questioning of the report, I think, went further than the actual report did. More people were talking about it not being true and not happening than people actually spoke about the sexual violence. What is happening there?
Well, I will not get into the New York Times report. And I have a good reason for that, because I think that people are emphasizing it's only one report. In Israel, we have several of reports about the sexual violence. We have first responders telling us what they saw. We have witnesses from the Nova Festival hiding in trees and bushes, witness this mass rape, witness this torture and abuse, and women being raped and murdered. We have the people that handle the disease and what they described. So I don't need the New York Times report in order to know that it's happened. I believe, like, you know, when you think about victims of sexual violence, you most likely think about the people that experience the sexual violence itself. But my personal belief that the people that witness this mass rape, and there was like, they couldn't do anything. Even if they wanted to help,
yes,
like they will be shot and killed. So they are victims themselves. And I believe the victims. I believe the victims. This is like the basic thing to do. So I don't need the New York Times report in order to know that it happened. The New York Times wrote his report, and it's fine, but there is other news media that wrote their own reports. There are a testimony giving to the Israeli police. There are testimony that are giving again by the people that handle the disease, and the people that go to the kibbutzim after they've been released and saw all the terrible footage over there, witness it. So I believe them. And we do have some survivors. And obviously, it's difficult for them to speak out and say, like, even like air quotes, normal sexual violence, victims, they taken from them for years sometimes to say, this happened to me. And like to be brave enough to say it. So it's very fresh. And again, the scale, I don't know what happened to the survivors, but I can imagine that the scale is like horrific. So I understand why the survivors don't want to talk, but we know that there are a few one alive from both genders, by the way. So I believe them, and I don't need any newspaper to say to me that it's happened or not happened, because I believe the victims.
So, and that is the whole point of the hashtag Me Too, is that the victims have a voice. So why is it when it is this specific attack, do we not believe the victims? Why is there?
I can't answer that because I believe them. So I can't answer why people, but other people don't believe them. I don't know. You need to ask them.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Miriam, let's talk a little bit about those that are still in captivity, in our hostages.
Okay? Yes.
I think they're 19 women.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get intelligence about what is happening and how they are, or any indication?
I don't know that because I'm not part of the Israeli government or the Israeli army and the authorities. I hope that they're getting some, but it's not published in the media, so we don't have any access to that. We do know the stories from the people that are released and what they're telling us that happened to them over there, and what they was told from other hostages that hasn't been released yet. So we know that there is sexual violence occur over there also. And again, I believe the victims. I will not get into the graphic, but there are hostages that is brave enough to say, again, it's fresh for them also, but they're brave enough. And I think that also they have like that, they feel that they have the responsibility to talk on behalf of the people that are still in captivity. So they're starting to tell and starting to tell their stories about what happened to them there, and about the sexual harassment and the sexual assault and about the humiliation that happened to them over there, and the stories that they heard from other hostages about sexual violence that occurred to them. So I really hope that they are going to be with home soon. And I want to emphasize from each gender, because we know even from the victims in Israel, like the one who has not survived, we know that there are men also, and also from the survivors. But also, again, I said from each gender, from any gender. So we need to bring everyone home.
Your organization, the Survivors of Sexual Violence Advocacy Group, have you been the main organization to support the survivors of the massacre?
We are not a support organization, so we are not like want to support them. Like, obviously, we want them to get support, but they are getting professional support from professionals. But our organization consult the Israeli authority regarding the evidence collection. Unfortunately, most of the evidence collection was from people who are not survived. And also, we consulted regarding the way we will accept the hostages while they come back to the hospitals in Israel. Because again, we have unique experience. We are survivors ourselves. Obviously, we are not survivors of armed conflict, sexual violence, but we are trauma aware and we are trauma informed, and we have a unique experience that can be helped in this situation.
Can you tell me a little bit about the work that you are doing?
In which field?
Yeah, specifically with the...
With the hostages?
Yeah.
We consulted the health authorities and the hospitals about how to accept the hostages with trauma-informed protocol, and what to ask, what not to ask, and how to collect evidence. Again, I said that the majority of the victims didn't survive, but here we have live victims and live survivors, and also like in the long term, like, okay, we accept them to the hospital, what we are doing next. Like this experience will not leave them in the next few days
or for a few years.
So again, we have the unique experience to tell the authorities what it is to be sexual violence survivors. And hopefully they will apply that to the protocol.
Mariam, you made an interesting point, and victims are not just those that were affected, but those who had to witness it. And that feeling of absolute helplessness, and also the exposure to such violence. Do you assist those?
We're not a support group,
a support group.
Organization. So we don't have like direct assistance to like individual survivor, the individual witness or something like that. Our organizations work on policy change. So like, for example, we want to make sure that everyone will get the therapy that they need. And right now in Israel, there is a lack of therapists in the mental health field. So we are doing our best to try to change the policies that more and more people will get the help that they need. Affected by the the October 7 attack, and not affected by the October 7 attack, because, you know, like, sexual violence is not a new phenomenon. It's happened in Israel even before the war. And a lot of people that are victims and survivors before the war, it's triggered them.
Yeah.
And now they need help. But right, all of a sudden, there is a flood of people that need help. Like, think about it. Thousands of people was direct affected by it. In the kibbutzim, in the festival, there are two music festivals in the south. The Nova Festival, which was the larger one, and there is a smaller festival, Psyduck. So all of them, all of the sudden, need help. And they are waiting to get help, like people before the war was waiting to get help.
And I know Israeli society has changed kind of in terms of men having to, or and women doing service, that in a way your society has shrunk. Those who are not
a lot of therapists are being held to reserves.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden people are left with no therapist.
Because the two things I understand from Israeli society at the moment, one is the culture of volunteerism among ordinary Israelis that has kind of glued the society together.
I can tell you myself, like on Sunday, the day after, I just wanted to do something.
Yeah.
I moved back to Tel Aviv. I live in Tel Aviv. I went back to Tel Aviv and I didn't know what to do. And someone published on Facebook that we are... there is packages being handled in Dizengoff Center, Dizengoff Circle, I'm sorry. And I went there and I wrote in my, I took a picture of 100 of people just packing donation for the kibbutzim. And I took a picture of that and I wrote in my family WhatsApp group, Am Yisrael Chai.
Yeah.
And that was the first time that I said, Am Yisrael Chai. And I, like, you can hear from the voice that I'm tearing up. Like,
So you have that sense of volunteerism on the one hand, and that is just as well, because I understand that so much is not happening in Israel, from agricultural work to tourism to, and as you're saying, therapies, that there's just not the support that the society needs.
Well, we're doing our best.
In terms of, I mean, just because I know that a lot of people, including South Africans, are going to Israel to volunteer.
Yes.
And I know that a lot of the time they end up picking tomatoes in
Ushabim. It's not the field of my expertise, so I can't comment about it.
No. But my point being, would there be a call for mental health experts to go to Israel? Is that what you need? And would it be worthwhile trying to get volunteers in that specific field?
I don't know. My personal belief that it's not going to be very effective because therapy is very cultural based.
Okay.
So the best type of therapy is in your native language.
Yes.
And someone that understands your cultural codes.
Your history, yeah.
Yes. So I don't think that it's going to be very effective.
It's such an interesting point. Miriam, you've been doing this job, obviously, for a while.
Actually, I joined this advocacy group after the war.
Oh, you joined it after?
In November.
Okay. Yes. Okay, because we all, some of the South African community know Yael, who is the director of the organization.
She's a South African herself.
Yes, she's a South African. She's been at Limoges. She's actually spoken on the show. So she is well known. So you joined did you join specifically because of the war?
No, but the world gave it a big push.
Okay.
Like after the world, the organization need more hands on board.
So this was your way of becoming more involved and
yes,
actively doing things. And I know Yael is in Berlin.
Yes.
Because 7th of March is International Women's Day, United Nations International Women's Day.
Yes.
So, I mean, which is why the rally was held today. Also, it's not big in South Africa, International Women's Day. I don't know if it's big in Israel, but I'm imagining South Africa has their own one. We have a whole month.
Okay.
We have a Women's Month. 9th of August is Women's Day. And we use it to highlight gender-based violence. But the whole month is almost dedicated to it. Not that I think it makes a huge difference. Which brings me to my next question, Miriam. Do you think that there is more awareness about sexual violence, and that the job of an organization like the Survivors of Sexual Violence Advocacy Group will have more teeth to do what they need to do.
In Israel? I hope so, but I'm not an optimistic.
Why?
Because I'm not an optimistic. Like, people don't want to deal with that. Like,
they want still.
Yeah, they want it to be kept in the closet. And they don't want, we started our conversation about triggering.
Mm.
And like that, sometimes we will cry and sometimes we will yell and we will get angry.
Mm.
And people don't want to deal with that. But, you know, tough.
Mm.
We are here. We're a part of the society. We're a big part of the society. And you will have to deal with us. But I'm not optimistic.
So you don't think there might be a change or?
Well, I am. No.
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 And we know talking to women isn't useful. We have to talk to men.
So it's important to me to emphasize that our organization is not a woman organization. It's a survivors organization. And we have survivors and we have volunteers from every gender, from men and women. So we are not a woman organization. Mm-hmm. We don't speak only to mm-hmm. women and we don't speak only to men. We speak to the general public.
Yeah, but
as survivors.
I'm guessing the perpetrators on it.
Some of the cases.
Okay.
In some of them.
So it's a huge societal problem. Basically, it's
all over the world. Like, Israel is not unique about it.
It's sobering.
I'm sorry?
It's sobering. It's something that we maybe don't talk about enough. Obviously, we don't talk about it enough.
Yes. For sure, we are not talking about it enough.
What is your message to society?
Believe the victims. Believe the victims, listen to the victims, listen to the survivors. We are here. We have a lot of knowledge. We are experts in this field. Listen to us and believe us when we are saying this happened to us. Because, as we said, there is a lot of shame, a lot of silence about this subject. So if people are coming out and they're saying this is happening to me, we have no reason to lie.
No.
So believe us. And after you believe us, listen to us. Because again, we are experts in this field and we have a lot to say and we have a lot to offer. And we can only gain from that.
Miriam, thank you so much. Firstly, for coming out to South Africa as the guest of the Jewish community.
Thank you.
And as you have been doing, speaking to NGOs, speaking at the rally. And thank you also for your courage.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with the South African audience and South African community about what happened in Israel and how you can help. So I encourage people to Google us and learn a bit more about our organization.
Thank you very much for joining me. That was Miriam Gvaram. Her organization is the Survivors of Sexual Violence Advocacy Group, if you want to Google that, and it's SSVAG. It's a civil society organization dedicated to influencing policy and legislation regarding the treatment of sexual violence in Israel. Thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you.